Comes on Tuesdays on WHIV-FM on the radio, and you can also check out goodmorningcomrade.com for more information. So this week we have just the crew here. This time no Scott, who was harping last time about it being a no girl show. So this time it's a no Scott show. So how about that? How y'all doing?
Yeah, I feel bad because... Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scott brings a perspective that's not, I don't know, I wouldn't say so cynical. So I also
levity.
Like Scott. Yep. I also like Scott a lot. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll try to get the energy levels up with Scott not here. Mm-hmm. Missing him.
Yeah. We will be missed.
God.
But we can do this. I believe in us.
Wait, so how long has it been since there's been a lady on the show? Because I know I haven't been on for quite a few weeks.
Don't tell her. Don't tell her. Don't tell her about that time.
Look. Did you guys replace me?
No.
So it's not about
lady can replace you.
It's not about, well, we'll see about that.
We're about to be in a fight, Robert.
Always. When are we not?
It's less about whether or not we have appropriate number of women on the show, but as long as we don't replace you with someone, it's okay. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, no. I hate all other women.
Oh, okay.
Cool. I only care about myself.
Oh.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Sorry. Okay. I'm sorry.
Did
anything
I
say
like
in previous episodes make it seem like I didn't feel that way? I feel like very strongly about that.
Say, I was going to ask how everybody's holding up, but I feel like
energy.
That's coming from somewhere, Aaron.
Yeah.
Cut myself some bangs and I dyed my hair pink. So that's how I'm holding up.
Which one does in a pandemic?
Yeah.
In a global pandemic.
I should have done that.
I belong to a bunch of like social work and like therapy meme sites, which are like funnier than you would think. But I'm like starting to identify more with like the client parts of the memes than the therapist parts of the memes. So like, yeah, so that's where I'm at.
You're just going through
like a vibe check.
All the sides of it.
Yeah. They're like, oh, when your client shows up to session with her having cut her own bangs. And I was like, oh, that's the therapist.
Ah, the teacher has become the student. Yeah. Estudiante.
I love it. Oh, I gotta get in these spicy social work. Look, Aaron, I will let you into the teacher meme sites if you let me into the social worker meme sites. How about that?
Deal. Okay, cool. I feel like yours are probably gonna be a little bit more cynical, but
I don't know. Some of the teacher memes are really sweet, and some of them are just really weird.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on like which. So the social work memes are like a little more lighthearted, but like the therapy in general memes are like a little bit. I don't know. I personally, there's like beef between like LPCs and social workers and LMFTs. So
that's not at all important to me.
Yeah, those acronyms.
Social workers are social workers. How do I even describe a social worker? I don't know. LPCs are licensed professional counselors. LMFTs are licensed marriage and family therapists.
LMFAO. That's a great band.
And that's laughing my.
Sorry party rocking.
If you are party rocking right now, you should be sorry because we're all supposed to be staying home. So
I'm party rocking right
anyway.
Now.
Anyway, I did.
So how you been, Jeff?
Yeah,
I've seen Robert many times.
Yeah, you're sick of him, I'm sure. But I don't see Robert because he doesn't have video on. But
I
will say
I don't do that video.
Robert, what did you do with your weekend?
What did I do?
Yeah.
I have fully endorsed and engrossed myself in the grill pill lifestyle. per my guru, my spiritual guru, Matt Chrisman of Chapu Trap House, who
what's the grow pill?
Well, that's what I was going to get into, and I hope we can secure his presence onto our podcast soon to explain, because you want to hear it from the master of the grow pill lifestyle. I think it's a combination of instead of coming down and swallowing the black pill and be like, oh, we're in a literal dystopia right now, like worse than we could have, like that would make science fiction writers blush. Like they'd be like, oh, it's too on the nose. It's the idea that, okay, we are in this dystopia. Mm-hmm. Personally, there's not a lot I can do about it right now. I can take care of my friends. I can take care of my family, but I refuse to let it get me down, man. And I'm going to live my life.
Mm-hmm.
And this COVID-19 thing is like, and the way that it's about to get a lot worse. Mm-hmm. Don't let them fool you. We're about to hit like high score on the death chart.
Yeah. The Trump administration's already like themselves saying that there's going to be like basically a 9/11 every day.
9/11 every day. It's cool. Just don't worry about it. Like, yeah, I mean, it's what we got to do to keep your Fuddruckers open, man. Don't you understand? I mean, it seems, I mean, even after 9/11, George Bush said to go shopping. I mean, why couldn't Trump do the same thing? He's telling us to you know, the COVID-19, the coronavirus hates our freedom. And the only way we can restore freedom is to get our pre-orders at GameStop.
Yeah, otherwise the coronavirus wins.
The virus is basically
a terrorist. Right. It just terrorizes your respiratory system. Yeah.
So what I did this weekend is what I've always wanted. I think we talked about it a show or two ago. Is I honestly have never, this is going to give people a lot of insight on my like mental state and well-being. I moved around a lot as a kid. My wife, Erin, who's on the other end, she is the most stable relationship I've ever been in. I love her very much.
Aww, that's
and
so
I've never owned any, I've personally never owned anything that I could not pack in a bag and throw in the back of a small car, because I've just never felt secure and safe anywhere. I've never really had a home. Not that I was homeless or anything. It's just I've always just been shipped around and moved around as a child. And my parents were divorced when I was really young. So it's like, Erin will say things like, do you miss your family? Like, don't you miss your family? I'm like, not really, because I don't feel I know them that well.
Yeah. You feel like you finally feel like you belong somewhere.
But now I have totally slid into middle-aged man, and I've started on the first piece of my man cave that I've always wanted. It's not the 4-slot, which probably is fine because I probably couldn't fit the 4 or the 6-slot. The 6-slot is known as the Big Red,
couldn't fit that. Like, definitely, that's not
like
even
you've
like a...
seen it. You wouldn't know.
Right.
What are you talking
you
about?
You wouldn't know. I'm talking about the greatest arcade machine known to mankind that's ever existed on Earth, the Neo Geo MVS, our multi-video system. I'm sorry.
You're a gamer now?
Yeah, I've been, but it played great games like you might know, like Metal Slug and Samurai Showdown and World Heroes. And I bought it from a guy who lives on the other side of Louisiana.
Yeah,
he in Lake Charles. I live in New Orleans. That's like 300 miles one way. And I rented a car from the airport. I rented a van. The van was $40. You could rent a small car now for $19 a day.
Cause ain't nobody going anywhere.
Yeah, ain't nobody going nowhere. So I did that. Took the drive out there. Picked it up. Paid the van. Brought it home. And now I am restoring it. I mean, it looks like hammered death, but I have painted the control cabinet panel. I've got a new power supply, which hopefully when that comes on Friday, will fix everything mechanical going on inside of it because it doesn't power on right now.
Holy shit.
It's okay. No, it doesn't. I've been doing the troubleshooting of why everybody says, hey, it's probably the power supply. Power supplies. You can't just stick like a computer power supply in there because it actually... It takes, okay, I have to get this straight. What was Tesla into? Tesla was into direct current?
Alternating current.
Alternating. So it takes the DC that comes out of your wall and turns it into AC. Mm-hmm. And because for some reason arcade cabinets run on AC, I don't understand why.
No, alternating current what comes out of the wall. So okay. you need to change it over to the other one. So most
yeah.
Power
so
supplies,
whatever's coming out of the wall, it changes it.
Yeah.
To the other thing.
That's what happens because.
Which one killed an elephant? I don't know.
It's AC. I'm outing myself as a huge nerd here. But AC,
anything about electrical engineering.
Here's your science lesson for the day. Sit in, kiddies. AC current is very unstable in the sense that it like when you see these big transformers and things like that, they make the loud noise because AC is like so unstable, but there's so much juice in it that that's why we're able to transfer entire electrical grids. It's so fascinating.
It is really fascinating, also terrifying because there is an LCD monitor in there right now, like you're a normal computer monitor, but I don't want that. I'm going to eventually get a old style tube CRT. And it's very fascinating and also very terrifying because that's the one part of the machine. Like, hey, if you touch this in the wrong spot, it'll kill you. So you've got to be like super careful about what you're doing. And
we used to have those in our house all the time.
No, you understand because the back is off of it. It's not like your TV. Mm-hmm. Think if you took your TV out of the bezel, out of the case, right? So you've just got the screen and then this kind of like jellyfish thing that sits in the back.
Yeah, the guts.
The gun, I think it's called.
Nice.
And
that sounds cool.
And if you touch that thing, like you can even touch it because the capacitors hold a charge.
Yeah.
So they hold a charge. And if you don't discharge that, it's still live. It can be live like days later.
Yeah.
So if you were just back, bah, 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 and touch it, yeah, you're dead.
Yeah. I mean, that gotta admit, that makes it at least a little bit exciting doing this, right?
Definitely the first time anything about me should not touch the thing has been mentioned.
I'm learning all this.
Were you gonna touch the thing or not?
It's like in the middle of our house, so I have to like go past it all the time to like get other places in
Robert brought a bomb into your house.
Since you want to be Jeff
stirring some
amateur
shit.
Electrical engineer, can you explain to her what I'm saying and why it won't?
No, I can't because I don't know how TVs work.
Okay.
You need something that converts the. So basically, what you have is I know what capacitors are, because capacitors are things that like do stuff on a motherboard, right?
Right.
And they often will hold like power and energy in them. And I've done classes with kids over the summer where you would break apart like things like computers and stuff or like a clock radio or whatever. And like they would bring something from home, like an old busted ass computer or something like that. And you would always like tell the kids, hey, don't touch those capacitors at all. And they always would.
That's it.
But you, Aaron,
would literally have to
capacitors.
Like, open the back, stick your hand on this one specific part while it had a charge.
What if I was planning on doing that? You should have
Then go for it, I guess. I mean, I can't, you grown,
go off,
what can I do?
But other than that,
I should be able to touch things. I should be able to open the backs of things and then put my hands on specific parts.
The world ain't safe like that, okay? You can't be like Superman and with his little like bottled city,
right? But other than that,
and do that
I think
to yourself.
Hopefully Friday it'll be working in working condition.
Sick.
After that, I just need to do some more paint to the front, paint the coin door, repaint the front vinyl. I'll order side vinyl. I need to Bondo some of the wood because it smelled like the wood on the bottom and some on the side. You can tell it got water damage. I can see the water line. That's why the power supply is bad. I think the power supply got submerged. So it smelled like Katrina when I brought it in.
Gross.
I did like anti-mold on the wood, and then I did wood hardener.
Did you? So does the board work though?
Yeah, I've seen the board in action. It's just the power supply hopefully gave out. because all of a sudden I went to turn it on and it just clicks. It tries to boot and clicks. And I showed it. I put a video online and I showed people and they were like, that's the power supply, bro.
So basically,
which made me incredibly happy.
You have a frame and a board.
Yeah, I have a frame, a board, an LCD monitor. The controls all work, but I'm going to replace them because the buttons are dingy.
That's awesome.
I've already replaced the light and the light in the marquee, but that doesn't turn on, obviously, because there's no power.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's going to be really pretty.
Well, I'm hoping you don't blow up.
No, I won't. I've got a guy.
You know a guy that can fix
No, I got a guy who's going to, he said he's going to give me a monitor. So I'm psyched about that. Like nice. 25 inch. Cause he's like, yeah, he's in Slidell. He's like, oh, I'll just give it to you. And I'm like, wait, I have all these questions. And he's just like, and I'm like, obviously, and honestly, I don't want it now because I don't want a heavy thing in there. I want it to be the last thing I'm going to do. And I asked him like, what about this? What about, he goes, why don't we just set up a time when I come over and just put it in? And I was like, that sounds like a great idea. Cause I
should interesting. Take this time, huh? To thank Donald J. Trump. For
I got a letter from him today.
Making this possible for you.
Yeah, he basically said he wrote a letter to me and my wife.
Oh, yeah.
To Jay Barrow.
Oh, me and Robert got separate ones. I guess they haven't registered our marriage yet. No, we haven't because we haven't filed taxes yet.
Oh,
like a married
that's what it is. Mm-hmm. I was wondering it's because I went back to independent as on my register.
They're just coming for register. You. Maybe it's part of the calculus. Who knows? But yeah, he just basically wrote me a letter saying that me and my wife wrote a letter saying that they gave us the Trump bucks. They gave us the Trump bucks, and on the back, it's in Spanish. So
yeah. Just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case you don't speak English.
Yeah. Dude, that's so woke.
I know we're laughing and all, but that's like such a genius move.
He's writing. He's sending out campaign mailers, but he's basically saying that this is a note from the Treasury
I would do
Department.
The same thing. If Bernie was president, I'd want him to do the same thing. I mean, I'd want
him
to do
a letter from Health and Human Services saying, you're welcome for Medicare for all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, we're laughing, like I said, but it's what, that's the power of the presidency. Like that's what you're able to do when you have a bully pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Democrats lose, because they either are incompetent or don't care to flex power like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of sick of talking about how terrible the Democrats are. Cause they just screw up every turn around because it's unbelievable. So I'm kind of burnt out on talking about the Democrats.
Do we want to talk about how much of an a-hole Elon Musk is?
Yes.
I've been raging about
three
things. I've been raging about Joe Biden. I've been raging about how bad the Democrats are about their jobs.
He named
and then
his
I've been
kid,
really raging about how ridiculous Elon Musk is.
He named his kid just a bunch of letters.
Yeah. And I, so I got into, like, I guess the kids are calling it a flame war. On Twitter, I had some red wine last night and made a comment.
Cool Karen move.
About Elon Musk and who, buddy?
I don't mean to use slurs on the podcast.
I have been called a Susan.
A Susan. Is that like a
what is the difference between a Susan and a Karen?
I think they were, honestly, I like have to give it to them. It was like a pretty good drag because like a Susan is the older version of a Karen.
Whoa.
Like, oh, damn. I was like, all right, I see what you did there, Elon Musk fanboy.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, what is it? It's
old.
Or it could be a Susan is the younger one, but I'm pretty sure they were dragging me. So I think it was the older version. Like a Kellyanne Conway would be a Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Elon Musk, he's like, but so that was like,
so what happened? What was,
his
what happened?
Baby name.
What happened to get you like, get the boys all mad at you?
Oh, I posted that meme. I should not be
allowed
to. They
do love
the
their God King.
So it's like,
jeez, I'm Lord. Oh, yeah,
I don't
right.
even remember what the post was, but the reason I was like posting in the first place is that a trans girl, she's like all up in her bio says trans, I'm not like outing anybody, but had like posted something critical of Elon Musk, and there was
How
just like a
dare.
Bunch of dudes just being kind of the worst. And yeah. so I don't know if y'all see.
So that's what I was going to ask you. So about, they were dragging her for being trans.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because if they're all like future boys or whatever, like Elon Musk is their future god king, like they'd be all into the like being trans would just be the first step to the
no.
Oh my goodness, help me out, bro.
No, it's like you know no, they're very
not the equilibrium, but mm-hmm. the we're man and machine like meld.
Oh well, you know, but like but these the, are the same boys.
The idea that, of like being same... able to being able to change your gender, being able to mm-hmm. like merge your consciousness with a machine. I know they're not the same things, but you could see how one would be like the next step.
But these are the boys that want fuckbots. You know, these are the kinds of guys that you're dealing with, not like anybody that's actually like woke on like the future of like. Post gender society or whatever, which is never even a possible thing. It's the stupidest
thing. See, Jeff,
thing
you're always
the
there to bring it back. Both post gender. That's kind of what I was trying to say.
Which is like, which is like pretty fucked up on its face. You know what I mean? The idea of like trans
gender society.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, like being trans is like by definition not post gender.
No, it's not like at all. We're kind of we're changing binary. Topics, but I'm interested in like why is post gender society fucked up?
Well, I guess because, I mean, right, in a sense, it could sort of, the problem isn't the gender, the problem is the oppression that goes along with it, isn't it?
What do you mean? Keep going.
So, like, gender-based oppression is the problem, not necessarily, like, gender and gender expression and like, all of the ways that it goes through. I mean, that's, like, the way that these boys would be talking about it would be, like, you know, essentially, there's... Like they talk about it like it's a biological thing. Right?
Are you saying let me try
or
to
like a like
understand.
A like a predator?
Are you
prey
saying
sort of
that
situation?
Like the idea of a post-gender society like downplays people's oppression, like women's oppression through misogyny?
I guess potentially.
I'm still if it's not that I don't understand. You're gonna have to elaborate more.
Well, so I think the idea of a post-gender society is that gender is inherently a construct, which it is, but like a lot of gender expression is not a construct.
And what isn't a construct? I mean, like most things in society are a construct, socially developed. Yeah. I mean, why are we so fixated on that particular one, right?
We can pat our tummies and chew gum at the same time. Like we could live in a. I mean, I know it's a meme now, but like, yeah, race is also a construct. We could live
in
like a post-racial society too.
Well, the problem isn't the race.
What do we want to do?
The problem is the oppression, right?
Sure. I mean, are you saying that the problem is people would make the arguments of, oh, I don't see gender, kind of like, I don't see race?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Like colorblind, race blind, gender blind, that kind of thing.
I don't think that's Aaron R. I's position for me to, not to speak for her, but I don't think that's our position. What is the position, Aaron?
Position on what? Post-gender?
Post-gender, what you were saying.
There's no like singular position, is there?
I don't have a position on post-gendered society.
What do you mean? We're just talking about it. Like the idea that even in a post-gender society, I would like to like for me, I would like to see to keep with the Elon Musk like futurist theme. I would like to see a post-gender society to where even in jobs that were dominated by men because let's say of just biological difference. I'm trying to think of something that even the one or two jobs that would be even now. I don't know. Let's say
I think that you're saying.
Let's say lumberjack or something like that. Even though there are women lumberjacks, it's terrible. But let's say something there that there was just because
male
physical
gender,
size and strength actually made
male.
A difference.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see technology like bridge that gap and everybody have you know, like mech suits or mechanized like muscles or whatever, and then it just wouldn't even matter. Like that would be like the merging of the tech and the.
But like it's not so. There's not the issue is not that, so, like okay, like for certain jobs that require strength, right? Like biologically, many men are stronger than many women, right? Mm. Obviously, there's like differences in individuals
in the aggregate,
but the idea is not that. We need to equalize that playing field, quote unquote. It's the idea that these like jobs that are quote unquote masculine get paid more and have more respect than jobs that are quote unquote feminine.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's like, it's not like necessarily like that we need to make it so like women can be lumberjacks just as easily as men, like the average woman versus the average man. It's more that, okay, a lumberjack is like, it's hard work, it's dangerous work, they need to get paid accordingly. But then also being like a home health care aide, which is like stereotypically like a feminine position,
mm-hmm. or feminized,
needs also to be respected and paid accordingly.
Right.
Not you're 100% that like, right. We need to fix it.
And that's not, I would say like, that's not even a misogyny problem. That's a society problem that we need to fix.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of society.
Yeah. Like
misogyny and classism, those are all like societal issues.
No, absolutely. And I was trying to say, it's not something that just concerns men. I remember this, like, this was probably a decade ago. I went on to, this is one of my first times in New Orleans. I came here with my mom's like church. It was some kind of church thing, and I did the construction or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're building people's houses after Katrina, right? And there was this guy, he's a doofus. Like, I remember my mom, okay, so before we even signed up, I was like, I'm gonna do the construction. My mom was like, oh, you're so good with kids. Like, you know, they have a need for like people to teach like tutor kids or whatever. Like, you'd be mm-hmm. good at that. Kids like you. And I'm like, I'm not doing that, mom. And she's like, oh, okay.
Internalized,
and
then, yeah.
So the point of the story is we were standing in line and there was this guy who was a doofus who was on the, he was with the group and he was doing the kid thing. And there was a group of like young, like my age. So I was like 25-year-old women, like in front of me, like making fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were making fun of him under his breath for that. And I was with my mom. I was like, Hey mom, do you remember that thing when you asked me like, why don't I do the thing? I was like, that's exactly why. And it's not like those women were, they were just kind of executing what was like societally okay to like make fun of a man who does something that's traditionally feminized.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts everybody.
Interesting.
That was a long story and I hope went somewhere, but hope that wasn't
too blunt. Well, you know, thank you for understanding our plight, Robert.
Fuck yourself. I just wanted an interesting conversation. You're like, go.
No, see, I can't relate. I've never ever been made fun exactly of for why. The stereotypically what? Feminine work I've done.
So I will say this. There is like stereotypically feminine things that
I'm a supreme gentleman. Our
expected role of Jesus Christ. Are you going Dude Rock on there?
Yeah.
Are we? But there are things that like, and this, I'm just going to make a distinction and like, just kind of like say this is a thing that exists and not like apply a value situation to it. But like, if a woman is doing feminized labor, someone who is sort of like, you know, socially identified as a woman, I guess, like read by the populace, and someone who's sort of like read by the populace as a male does the same kind of labor, it is viewed entirely differently. In some ways it's viewed as a kind of weakness by a man and like a transgression, as opposed to like fulfilling an expectation based on gender. And then in other ways, there's a lot of like patronization that goes along with it. You know what I mean? Like, oh, wow, you're a dude. I get this with a lot with being a dude teacher. Like, wow, you're a dude teacher, you know?
No, I've heard that as like a thing. It's like, dude, like people are like, don't be a dude teacher. People automatically think you're a pedo.
Well, yeah, that's true. That. I mean, it's just a weird thing that goes along with it. I don't know, man. That's just another way that these things are sort of like compound on one another. And I'm not trying to like whine or complain about it or anything, but I'm definitely acknowledging that that's a thing that exists and that I see in the world. And that kind of like
goes, it's different. Uh-huh. So, cause it's like men get, so social work is a majority female profession, mm-hmm. but the men who are in social work tend to rise up to leadership positions quicker.
Oh, same in teaching.
Yeah.
Same in teaching. Yeah. So it's not a one-to-one thing, but there are a lot of like union leaders and teachers and administrators and superintendents and coaches and principals are disproportionately represented by men, for sure. And it's because of the sort of way that we teach like men that they have to be like socialize them to be essentially constantly rising. And it's that's just another part of it. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but like I'm definitely agreeing with you.
Yeah, you were just constantly rising. That's all. You weren't interrupting.
No, right.
I think that's a really an interesting way to frame it, though, because like I view it as that men are inherently looked at as more trustworthy and more more competent than women, and
oh, yeah.
So
that's a part.
Oftentimes, like yeah, that's why they end up rising.
That's a part of it, okay. Isn't it?
Yep.
Like a part of this whole thing. It's not like these two things are not in contradiction with one another, I don't find.
Oh, no. They're definitely both accurate, but I think that's an interesting like way to frame how we both framed it for ourselves.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Interesting.
I think it's a general... I mean, and I'm sure that there are exceptions. I did not expect to talk about this, but I'm kind of glad we did.
Yeah.
But like that's one of those ways that you sort of like, I'm sure that there are exceptions to this, but like broadly speaking, that's something that you can see, if not across the board, then fairly broadly.
It's also interesting though, because my clients oftentimes won't, like they will not have a male social worker. They just like, were like, oh, I won't talk to a guy. Like I will not talk to a man. I will only talk to a woman. So like they'll accept like a female caseworker or, you know, nurse or anything like that, but like they also won't have a female doctor. So it's like, it's very interesting to see how some of this stuff plays out. Cause like a lot of my clients are all of my clients are of a like lower socioeconomic background or else they wouldn't be in permanent supportive housing. But,
right.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. There's like a lot of sexism and a lot of like very casual sexism when it comes to like our interactions. And I just think that's, it's like, it's very fascinating to me, in like the way that intersects and kind of, I think a lot of times people view like the caseworker therapy doctor relationship to be like inherently unequal. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they try and like take back some of that feeling of power by like then being like sexist or racist or, you know, whatever ism is like right. available to them at the time. Well, it's pretty fascinating.
I think that, and this is, I mean, this might be like dime store, like, you know, dime store psychologist or whatever, but I kind of think of those kinds of things as like when you're being held or being put into so many situations where you are powerless, you kind of want to seize on any opportunity or any way to sort of assert your you know, authority or whatever. And and that's kind of why that kind of takes place. I think.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no value judgments on it. Like
it's just what it is. I mean, it's beyond
It's just it's very interesting. Like it's something that you have to kind of like tiptoe around a little bit. Like cuz it's important. I mean, obviously it's my workplace, so like I'm not going to go to work and then have someone be like sexist to me or like rude or unsafe or anything like that.
Not directly.
But there is like, you know, it's like I do understand where it's coming from. And it's at some level, like I am a safe person for them to like express that to.
You're not calling them out.
Oh, no, I do. It's depending on what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's important. Like that's part of my job too. Like
right.
having it, like we should talk about this too, but like having
Let's
a therapist
it.
Is not having someone validate all of your like life choices. And
that's
like,
not things. What I was, that's not what I'm suggesting. Like you're not like looking for things to say like, well, look at you doing the racist thing. You know what I mean? Like that's not your
job.
Yeah,
no, you have to like, it's part of my job to kind of to
issue correctives,
help
but like,
people be to live their lives in a healthier, more positive, like whatever that means for them way. And so, you know, if a client is like, I always like, I'm like, is this helping or hurting your life or is it neutral? If it's neutral, I usually don't worry about it. If it's like hurting other people, I'll say something. If it's hurting them, I'll say something, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, if it's just directed towards me, I'm like, eh,
whatever, I could deal with
really
that. Yeah.
It is a very interesting thing, the way that works out, though.
I think of that kind of as a teacher, I experienced some of the same things, not exactly the same, because like I definitely do want to like promote positive behaviors going forward. But if they're like coming at me or whatever, especially like when it comes to like, you know, kids just rejecting me on my face because I'm the authority in the classroom, I'm not going to like always just put my foot down. You know, or just like do any of that kind of stuff, because it's, I see some similarities in what you're talking about, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so I used to work at the jail, mm-hmm. and, there was a lot of like really nightmarish stuff that happened in there. Like a lot of like very intensely gender-based interactions. Like, guys would just like whip out their dicks like pretty frequently. And like when I would come over, like I got grabbed by a couple guys, like just very much very, very gendered. And like, obviously I'm going to put a stop to that because it is my workplace and, you know, I don't deserve to have those kind of interactions in my workplace, but I never took it personally because it isn't me. Like they're not doing that to me because like they want to particularly quote unquote subjugate me. I represent like a power structure.
Correct.
In that situation, and like them using like gender-based oppression is the easiest way for them to reestablish their sense of power,
to assert themselves.
And so like, because I know this happens a lot where people use the term manipulative, like in kind of, you know, it's something that we talk about. It's like, oh, that client or that so-and-so is like manipulative, they'll try and manipulate you. And it's something that I think is like a very interesting thing, because like when I say that, I'm saying it completely without judgment, because the system is like really, really fucked. And so like people have to manipulate it to get what they need. And so by saying that someone's like, oh, going to try and like manipulate you to get the things they need, like that's not a value judgment at all. It's just like a statement of fact. But it's like very interesting how like societal judgment has like creeps into stuff like that. Like, and instead of thinking, oh, they're like, they're innovative, they use like they use the tools around them to get the things they need, which, you know, for certain, like a quote-unquote Elon Musk, if we want to talk more about what an asshole that guy is, like those are all considered positive things. But then when someone of a lower socioeconomic or lower class like does the same thing with the tools that they have, it's like considered to be this like very bad, problematic thing.
Well, you know what though, you made a really interesting connection just now, I think. Because you were talking about, that's kind of where we started with this conversation with the like.
About Musk. How much I hate Elon Musk and I think he's a dick. Yeah.
And the Musk boys who like always kind of like hop on to these sort of situations and say like, fuck you women or whatever, or you're a Sharon or what was it?
A Susan.
Yeah. but like they, like, and maybe I'm doing the thing again. But like I suspect that these people create fanboys, and they're fanboys for these, you know, complete and utter, you know, shithead, you know, alphas as they view them, these chads, because their own sort of like self image is so low that they just sort of need to take it out on people.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Like that's what I didn't really. It didn't really like bother me too much. I just thought, I was like, oh, why did I do this when I knew this was going to come my way? Red wine is the answer to that. That is why I did it. Mm-hmm. I also got into a fight with like a bunch of people on my Facebook page about Joe Biden, but we'll talk about that.
One thing at a time.
It's this idea, it's like the myth of upward mobility, and it's the myth of meritocracy. Right. And it's this idea that if you're smart and you work really hard and you have this like super innovative idea, like you will be able to be a billionaire. And like, that is the American dream. And I'm like, hey, so Elon Musk's family owned an emerald mine in apartheid South Africa. So like, does your family own an emerald mine in apartheid South Africa? Because if not, then like you're probably not going to make Elon Musk money, no matter how smart and like how many good ideas you have. And it's sad. It really is sad, because it's like this outlet. It's like all these people who should be angrier at their own circumstances and the society that brought them to the circumstances. And instead they're choosing to use, it's like they're, basically like the outlet for their anger is to defend fucking Elon Musk.
Right.
Who dropped the value shares of the value of his shares by like, what did they say? Like $4 billion because he tweeted that Tesla stocks are valued too high because he's a fucking idiot.
And, and the other thing with that too is that like the and this kind of goes along with the idea that people feel that they can't change things, so they sort of like snap on to and I don't mean to be all like fucking Foucault about this shit, but like there's this idea that everybody feels like they're powerless in their general life. There's this sort of like sense that like there's a powerlessness in sort of attacking the actual source of their problem, which are the Elon Musks of the world. They instead decide to venerate them and then attack the people that they should be having solidarity with.
Well, like the other thing that people said in like when they weren't calling me Susan, was, oh, Elon Musk has done more for this world than you will ever do.
What have you ever done for this world?
False. I've already done more for the world than Elon Musk will ever do. Mm-hmm. So sorry about it.
What has Elon Musk ever done for the world, ever?
Yeah, okay. So to be honest, I don't have an answer to that, but their answer to that would be space. Something
space.
About space.
Oh, you mean the
something,
fact that
something space.
The fact that he was able to the fact that he takes government money and does the job that NASA was already doing in the 70s. Yeah, wow, yeah. He's amazing. What would
that, and then also electric cars. Which my friend has a Ford electric car, so like that.
Yeah, so Elon Musk didn't make that. Elon Musk didn't make it that car. He just makes luxury cars.
There's just, it's this idea like, oh, climate, like there is this like mythos around him that he is like sitting in his lab just like, that meme with all like the beautiful mind numbers just like swirling all around him and like solving world hunger and climate change. But I'm like, hey, remember when those Thai kids were like stuck in a cave and he was like, I'm going to get them out. And then he didn't fucking get them out. And then he called the guy who actually got them out a pedophile.
Yeah.
Do y'all remember that? I remember that.
He's
I totally remember that.
I think I heard him described today. And this was really the best, the best description of Elon Musk I've ever heard is, what if somebody just gave a sixth grader, you know, and this is not fair to sixth grader, but if they give a sixth grader like $100 billion or however much money Elon Musk has, and that makes the most sense, actually.
I was listening to NPR because y'all, my phone was in the shop, so I didn't have my music. So that's why I was listening to NPR. But there was a sixth grader on
who
turned
post?
the genome for COVID-19, he translated it into music.
That's weird.
And made a song.
Very weird.
So, like, I don't know. Elon Musk could never. It was, like, not a bad song. He said it wasn't something that you probably would hear at parties, but it wasn't not pleasing to the ear. And I had to agree with him.
Yeah.
And then
I don't know.
I feel like this kid probably doesn't have any friends. But, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a guy that cliche of he stood on the shoulder of giants.
And he thinks he's a giant.
But it's people's, like, they're looking for some kind of savior. They think that
on third base and thought he hit a triple, that thing.
Yeah, exactly. And he's another brand of people who think that, oh, this guy's going to, like, take us all to Mars and solve. I won't have to worry about it because Elon's going to do it. And it's actually a blessing that he is like a dumb smart guy.
Such a fucking idiot. He's not a smart guy at all.
I mean,
he's not a smart man.
If he was, we'd be really in trouble because he is the kind of guy that could like all the jokes about people setting up, you know, Libertarian Island or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like he's the guy with the resources to do it. Mm-hmm. So just let's revel in his stupidity and just be glad that he's not a smart man.
And sort of like exploit that stupidity as much as possible. You know, he thinks like, I don't know, he thinks he's like a fucking like Marvel comics, like a fucking
he's Tony Stark
or a Batman.
He thinks he's Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm. And like Tony Stark,
and
he's like the biggest. And by the way, Tony Stark is like the biggest piece of shit out of all of like most of the Marvel characters are pretty terrible, but Tony Stark is the worst one.
He has his days. Like he got better. And
Oh, I accidentally sold military weapons to destroy foreign countries. But I got better. I mean,
the idea. Okay, you can understand why he's like a profiteer or whatever. But when he made all that money, Tony Stark's unforgivable sin is how easily the U.S. government can manipulate him, because. When he made nothing but like weapons and weapon systems, so when the government was like, "Hey, you're going to keep tabs. You're gonna Shield is like the CIA of the Marvel Universe. It's like you're gonna help us keep tabs on all these superheroes and come up with ways to kill your friends if need be." And he's like, "Why would I do something like that?" And Nick Fury's like, "Because we'll cancel all your contracts."
and he's like,
"I guess I'm doing that."
Well, that plus. That plus the thing where he kind of is just like a one singular person. Like he's like a very like if we're talking about that comic, you know, or those movies, Tony Stark, like Elon Musk, is sort of like this Randian idea of like the individual can just sort of like determine the fate of the entire world, you know, ideas or through his deeds or whatever the hell. And
I have to admit, I am kind of a proponent of the great man theory, to where like the history is just a big game of civilization. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that what gets that man, or when I say man, I mean, you know, just in the sense of mankind.
Mostly it's
what gets that person to the point where they can be great is a million different things and a million different steps and a million different people along the way. Mm. But I'm in the camp of, yes, one person can have the one idea that can completely change history.
Well, yeah, that's not great man history, though. That's like the great man idea of history is like, one person can like singularly by his this deed or that can excuse me, can determine the fate of the world, as opposed to what you're like he's essentially a genius god king, like
right.
And on the other hand, you're saying that the other side of it is that a person is capable of doing something or some things, so that they can sort of change the way things operate, or, you know, change the trajectory of the world for the better or the worse. And then from there, they have developed a certain amount of influence. That's different. That's more like the trends in political like structures organizing around an individual. I think I know what you're saying, and like, I'm not saying you're necessarily wrong, but I think that there's more to it than what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, there's not just like somebody's not just born and then this person's destined to do XYZ because of their intellect. I mean, the smartest man in the world could live in Plato's cave, and if he never sees the sun, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But it's just the idea that somebody can be like, the reason why I really am kind of a proponent of that, because I believe that a lot of human potential is locked inside of people who don't have the means to they don't have the means to get their ideas out. And that's why I'm a big proponent of like social welfare systems and UBI and stuff like that.
Right.
Because there's so many, like, you know, again, like the cliched cure for cancer is locked inside of somebody's head and could get out, but they're too busy having to hold down three jobs and, you know, worrying about how they're going to put their kids to
school. Yeah, 100%.
They could be freed of that garbage. They could become the great man.
Yeah, 100%. So, like, basically, the idea that you're saying, the way that you just articulated it, I mean, it sounds like the opposite of the great man theory, in the sense that, like, any single person could be the great person.
Oh, absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Like, you don't know. That's the thing.
Yeah, and that is a really, I mean, I don't know if I totally agree with it, but, like, I definitely agree with the sort of, like, the thrust of that is the fact that like you don't have these special fucking people who can just right. like determine like whatever they want and who should be able to determine whatever they want in the world just because of how they were born or because their daddy had a diamond mine in fucking South Africa or whatever. Yeah. Right.
I mean, my main, I like the person I use as an example that I can think of in modern history is J.K. Rowling. Like, I don't care about what you think about Harry Potter or her politics or whatever, but the idea that she made this thing that like culturally changed the world when she is a single mother on welfare because she didn't have to worry about how her kids were going to get fed. She was able to get those ideas out of her head.
I'd have to know and more like about that, it, but I'm sure there's, I mean, I know she was working.
I mean, that's like the example that I can just like right off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But I mean, like there's a million different ideas like that where somebody just needs the time and, you know, they need the time and they need the freedom.
Or they're just the dumb fucking luck. I mean,
dumb luck. But I mean, you have to say you can't do any of the great man things. You can't create the next, you know, great poem or great scientific discovery or great engineering discovery if you don't have Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right. Yeah. You need to make sure that you're
eating. Are we talking Maslow?
Yeah, I love Maslow.
The door. I had to like stop. I didn't eat myself. I love me some Maslow.
Me too.
Who's Maslow? Yeah.
Maslow. Maslow is, to be honest, I don't know. I feel like that was a gotcha question.
Probably a dude.
I don't know.
I think he was a philosopher. No, I want to say he was. We'll just say he's a philosopher.
I talked about Harry Potter. You weren't here.
Oh no. That's a thing that I've been explaining to him. I feel like if he gets to explain video games to me, I get to explain Harry Potter.
I'm on board for Harry Potter.
For all of you guys listening who are wondering, I am a Hufflepuff, but I also don't feel like I need to run our government by Harry Potter standards. So like I need everybody to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told
that Magic is a really completely bullshit. I don't know
what that means.
Organizational structure.
Yes, what are you? Are you a Ravenclaw?
I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. anyway.
No, I actually use Maslow's hierarchy in all of my trauma groups that I teach so that people can understand kind of like why they do the things they do. Because we all have these really great, like high-minded ideas of like, oh, if I was in this situation, this is how I would react. And until you're actually in that situation, like, you don't know.
Yeah.
Like, we are all essentially, we're animals. And so take away our material needs and we will revert back to survival mode. So if you don't have food, if you don't have water, if you don't have safe shelter, you will do what you need to do to get those things. Like whether, like it comes up a lot with sex work. It's like this idea like, oh, I would never do so low. Yes. And I'm like, yeah, you would. Like
you've never been hungry.
Yeah. Like, yeah, okay, you would do it. You would either do it or die, like, at a certain point. So, I don't know how that pertained to anything else you were talking
about.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was actually, Abraham Maslow, he wrote in a 1943 paper about the theory of human motivation, which is an interesting framing, by the way. Like, you cannot possibly be motivated to do anything more than to meet the most critical set of needs that are in front of you. And kind of the way I'm looking at this sort of graphic organizer is the triangle. It actually looks a lot like the, there's a sort of like a scaffold, like a learning pyramid that goes along similar lines, which was like the pyramids used to be the thing when it came to using when it came to creating
graphic organizers. Yeah, I mean, we have like the nutritional pyramid, and that's not a thing anymore.
Yeah,
apparently,
remember
that? The plate now.
Yeah, we need a plate now for the.
We were all eating way more grains than we actually. Yeah.
Oh my god, we're down in so many carbs.
Oh, many
outrageous.
Carbs.
But
they were like, you don't need vegetables. What you really need is more carbs.
Yeah. Nah, they were all about veggies. They're like,
yeah, there was a lot of veggies.
No, that was not the bottom. Mm-hmm. Vegetables was not
carbs,
the bottom.
Carbs definitely were, though. Carbs, God.
Carbs. Yeah, but at the bottom is like psychological needs, food, water, warmth, rest, then safety, security, then belonging. So that becomes more social. And then like Hi. Accomplishment. And I would actually start to get a little bit interested in that sort of like when things get less concrete and more abstract, that's kind of like where I get really interested, because that's where things become a bit more debatable, I think. You know what I mean? That esteem needs.
Yeah. Well, so, for a real world example right now, here in New Orleans, a lot of the people who had been living under the bridge are now living in a hotel. They have a couple different hotel sites, and it's in order to help halt the
spread
of COVID.
How much they pay it? No, I'm kidding.
Well, so we are, I work on the crisis line, and we're actually getting a lot more calls about people who are having like mental health emergencies. And the reason for that is that once your material needs are met, so you know where you're sleeping that night, you know you're relatively safe, you have food, you have water, you have air, you have all of those things you need. Right. That's when you can move on to start thinking about your health, just your health in general. So like, that's one of the reasons why it's like, you may have heard the buzzword where, you know, and I know like, especially with the Chicago teachers strike that happened a few months ago, that they were housing, affordable housing was part of the demand. And part of the reason for that is that you can't focus on anything else if that Correct. Particular need isn't met. And so people, you know, who have had a trauma or who have mental health issues or who have some sort of a health issue, like people who are homeless don't end up making it to their primary care doctor pretty frequently. And they don't end up making it to their weekly counseling sessions or their group therapy sessions or, you know, whatever it is. And so when someone is finally stable and they're not having like all of their brain power isn't going towards how am I going to live until tomorrow, they get to start having like, okay, like, well, all of my material needs are met, but now what's going on with my mental health? What's going on? You know, I don't have any friends. I'm feeling lonely. Mm-hmm. I don't have a partner. I feel like I want romantic just intimacy. And, you know, I don't have a great relationship with my kids. Let me think about like what that means for my life. You know, it's, sometimes it can look like if you don't understand what's going on, that like, as soon as someone gets quote unquote stable, they have a mental breakdown. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the reason for that is that they were just in survival mode for so long that now it's like, okay, I actually have the time and space and energy to focus on this more internal stuff.
Taking a minute.
Yeah.
And that's important. I mean, like that's the other thing too, because the way that our society is structured and now especially sort of like in the, this especially happened in like those early couple of weeks after like quarantine started, everybody kind of was like had a minute, unless you were like a frontline worker and you were, you know, doing things like, you know, picking up garbage or working as a nurse or a doctor or in a grocery store or any of the other like super critical jobs that like should be paid way more and be valued way more in our society. But like the folks that like me, I'm a teacher, who were able to sort of like take a little breath out, kind of did have a breakdown. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm not even saying the breakdown's over. Like I've been in a ongoing breakdown for the past several, like 2 months probably. But, I don't know. There's a kind of component of, you were able to sort of like take a minute, see what's going on, and then sort of actually invest in the things that you wanted to do for a little bit. And that is hopeful or whatever about it. Like that's a potential vision of a society that could, like, could you imagine if there was a permanence in that? If there was like a way that you could actually just sort of constantly do what you wanted to do instead of like constantly having to fight to go to work every day, a job that you hate, which you might not hate your job, but I mean, like, I don't totally hate my job either, but like, I would definitely do different things and I would definitely follow different, I would do it a different way if I could get away with doing it without the threat of getting fired or whatever, you know? And that's the sort of the thing, like those baseline needs, the food, water, warmth, rest, you know, security and safety, those things are held in our society for sure. They're held, and those are the conditions by which you have to work to survive.
Yeah. I mean, like, very, like, Maslow very much envisioned those things to be, like, the inherent rights. Like, it's, I mean, it's, like, the things we just all need to survive. And it's, like, very odd to me that as a society we have just collectively decided that, like, some people get to eat and some people don't.
Right.
Because, like, we have decided that. And, like, for instance, like, I have a lot of clients who are drug users, and like, they do end up running out of money, and then they don't end up having money for food. But the, like, when you're trying to get assistance for them, like, the amount of, oh, well, they use drugs, so like, they don't get assistance. And I'm like, okay, well, like, have we just decided that people who use drugs don't
get worth nothing?
Like,
yeah,
societally, have we just, is that like the metric is like, drug users get to starve? Like, is that what we've all decided? And like, when you put it to people in those terms, they're like, no, that's not what I meant. And I'm like, but that's essentially
exactly
what
they meant. They just didn't want to say the quiet part loud.
Yeah. Like, I feel like as leftists, and I'm making myself pretty unpopular with my friends and family during this quarantine, because I usually am like the one who's like, okay, like, let's come to like common consensus. That's just my personality. And I do that a lot in my job.
Now
but
fights with
I'm just
Musk,
like, I'm not
Elon
willing.
Boys.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm not willing. I'm not willing to put a happy face on stuff anymore. And not like I was before. Like, I have been pretty vocal about like my feelings about societal inequality and things like that. But like, I'm just, I've always tried to say things in a way that like, okay, the other person can like maybe not feel as bad and can hear me a little deeper because like, whatever. But I don't have it in me. Like, I'm having my own like breakdown, and I don't have it in me to like make people feel better about their fucked up opinion.
Your descent into your descent into dirtbaggery is just accelerated.
I'm there. Like, to be honest. I mean, there's been more than one times where I'm like, should I just burn something down? And then I'm like, no, I shouldn't do that. But like,
depends on what you're burning down.
Yeah, well, I have a list. Mm-hmm. So allegedly.
this is satire.
Satire.
In the game.
We're just talking things out right now. Yeah, it's like deeply frustrating to me. And I feel like we all just have this like willful, it's like we have to have this idea of ourselves as these like noble creatures in order to survive from day to day. Like, oh, we like these, I have a deep sense of self and I know I would never do these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and Robert always makes fun of me because I call myself an ethical nihilist. He's like, you're not a fucking nihilist. And I'm like, I'm not a nihilist.
You're not
I'm an
ethical,
ethical
either.
Nihilist. But so what that means is like, you cannot, like, there is no such thing as like a set standard of morals. And there's no such thing as like just across the board things that are good and things that are bad. Right.
Not
because like, let's say we can talk about murder, for instance. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, for me in my position right now, murder is like inherently a very unmoral thing to do. But if we're looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and then we're also talking about like survival instincts, like, mm-hmm. If you're hungry and you need to murder someone to eat, and we're not talking about like just a little hungry, we're talking about starving, or like, let's not even say for yourself, let's say your kid is hungry. Like, I'm like, who am I to sit and make a moral judgment on like that situation? So I just feel like everything that's going on right now is like people who are not in the situation making moral judgments that they have no business making.
So I wouldn't call you a nihilist. I would just say that you're not an absolutist, right?
Ethical nihilism is the actual term for it. I looked it up.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's not the term that I would use. I'm not going different dictionary definition because
I'm a self-identifying as an ethical nihilist.
So if you're an ethical
nihilist. Let me live my truth, Jeff.
So if you're an ethical nihilist, then what ethical basis do you have by using a dictionary definition? What ethical value does that provide?
Oh, boy.
I don't have an answer for that because there's no such thing as ethics.
This is going into some Jordan Peterson
okay,
shit.
Anybody who has
is this Destiny? Am I on the Destiny show?
Huh? What's that?
I said anybody who has complaints about this episode can go directly to you, Jeff.
Yeah, that's fine.
Don't come into my mentions. There's already a bunch of Elon Musk fanboys in there. There's no room for you.
Oh, I'm sure I'm going to get some stuff about my terrible opinions on gender. That's fine.
No, you don't have a
terrible opinion. Do you normally get stuff on your terrible opinions on gender?
No, I just had to clarify. I was trying to, like, get you out of that mic because you were about to about to step in it. Like, if that would have led
me. I feel exactly the same way that I did prior. I mean, I don't feel like I've changed anything. I mean, I definitely, like, I appreciate talking about it. But I don't think I'm, like the position that I had before is not changed.
No, your position was fine, but just on its face.
Yeah, like, it sounded wrong.
It was bad. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be seen as real bad.
But, I mean, I'm definitely, like, one of the things that I value, and, like, I didn't mean to get pedantic about that thing earlier, Aaron, but I think it's important that when we're talking about these kinds of things, we are... There has to be a rooting somewhere in what is good and what is bad. And, like, I don't know if it's possible to determine if things are good or bad. If, like I don't know, that term ethical nihilist does not seem to be one that is particularly, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a pedant.
Okay. Moral nihilism is the meta-ethical view that nothing is morally right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Moral nihilism is distinct from moral relativism, which allows for actions wrong relative to a particular culture or individual.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is something my therapist told me I needed to start free associating in a journal, which I do feel like would be helpful to me, but I haven't done it yet.
What if you just did it into a microphone instead?
Oh, that's essentially what this is for me.
Well, there you go. Then you're already doing it. Tell that to your therapist.
Doing great. We're doing great.
Also, what moral value does your professor, does your therapist bring to the table?
She's really good. I've only just started seeing her, but she brings a lot of good things.
But if you're a moral nihilist, what value do they bring to the table?
No, so it's not that there's, like, no...
I'm sorry. I have to
is, like, a good thing for me to, like, put into work words out, yeah. Because I don't necessarily feel like, so, okay, in order to feel this way, in order to have these kind of viewpoints, you have to completely take yourself out of the idea of, like, justice in the criminal justice sense.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about, because when we're taking value judgments out of, like, when we're just taking judgment out of other people's actions, right? It doesn't mean that there hasn't been harm caused.
For sure.
Or that, like, there is not hurt. And so you have, so, like, somebody can have done something and I can view it as ethically, like, I don't have an ethical view on it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also still recognize that another person or something has been harmed, right?
Sure.
So, like, right now, how we deal with that is, like, oh, there's, like, there, we do put a lot of moral judgment. And then we also, like, okay, like, you did something morally bad, we are going to put you in jail. Whereas, like, in my view of things, it's like more of a restorative justice. And it's also the idea that, like, harm can live without fault, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
For sure.
Like, we're just so bizarre. It's like this idea that, you know, if someone was harmed,
mm-hmm.
then we ought, like, someone else had to be at fault.
Somebody had to have caused
that
harm.
That's, like, not almost like how a real world works.
Yeah, well, it's almost like a theory, I mean, like a thesis and antithesis, right? If there is a photograph, there must be a negative of that photograph, right?
Yeah.
And that's a very sort of, like, direct, balanced sort of world. And things are not quite that straightforward. They're a lot more relative, aren't they?
Yeah, well, like, it's part of the reason why we have such a hard time dealing with all of these, like, isms, because there's this idea that, like, oh, if you are, okay, like, let's say I'll use sexism because that's, like,
the
thing I know the most. But there's this idea that if, like, someone was sexist towards me and I was harmed by that, then that other person automatically had malintent, that they automatically were trying to harm me, that they did something wrong.
Summarily, right? They are a sexist.
Yes. And that is, like, not helpful to the conversation at all. It doesn't help me at all. It doesn't help that person.
It's absolutist.
It doesn't help society at large. And so when we're, like, looking at these things, it's just so frustrating because we're just perpetuating. And, like, but what I mean by that is that, okay, let's say, and when we're talking about, like, we're not talking about, like, power differentials. We're not talking about anything like that. Cause that's, you know, I think there are more. You can, someone can be more at fault when there's like a power differential there. But like, let's say it's somebody like just one of my peers. Let's say it was you, Jeff, and you said something sexist to me, mm-hmm. and like I was hurt by that. Like, we would be able to have a conversation, and like, but you and like you at, just as a person have grown up in a society that is sexist. And so anytime that you do, you have to unlearn all those things. And like, for both you and I, like, we've grown up in a society that is racist. Mm-hmm. It is just like our society is steeped in white supremacism. And so that is like how we grew up. And so every time, like, in order to be actively not racist or actively not sexist, we have to consciously undo the things that we've already learned. And sometimes people slip up. And for those slip ups, when no harm was intended, we should be able to acknowledge the harm, but then also not make a value judgment on the person who did the thing, mm-hmm. because like, it's just not helpful.
Right.
Now, if you maliciously did something, mm-hmm. like with intent to harm, like that's a different story, but like, mm-hmm. we just keep having these conversations. It's like, we've talked about this before with cancel culture, but it's like, acknowledging so harm times. Is not the same as acknowledging blame. Does that right. all make sense? No, am I no, making any sort no, of sense
no,
right now?
No, you're making perfect yep. sense. Now, in terms of the other side of it, the intention or malice or whatever, there's also degrees of that. You know, there's degrees of like light ribbing toward and like moving up. There's intentionality. There's like points to which like people will use these sort of like cultural faux pas. And like when do things become malicious, you know, it's it's not like a very hard line, and I'm not trying to like,
it's not a hard line at all. There is, it's like very fluid.
Yeah. And that's sort of like the point I'm trying to bring up here. And I'm
yeah,
not,
absolutely.
And it's worth sort of like considering, that on who needs Matt Crispin? We got this. but it's worth sort of like considering that sort of not singularly like it's this or that. It's probably some of both, and probably a lot less of like it's a lot more of an interplay than it
well,
is
like,
of a direct.
For me, it's like, okay, when I talk about, I'm using all this, like this is what I talk about with. So for those of you who haven't listened before, I ran a sexual trauma group at the women's prison in Louisiana. And these are women who unfortunately are just, they're not going to get the kind of like justice and the kind of closure that like would be ideal. And so we talk about like, how do you move forward when something truly bad has been done, done to you? And a lot
question.
Of that is we talk about, you have to judge the action, not the person. And it doesn't have anything to do with the person themselves. Like, we're not cutting someone slack. We're not like making things easier for them. But especially when it comes to like sexual assault, since this comes up in my trauma group, it's like oftentimes these people, like the perpetrators, the people who are committing these assaults, are like otherwise like really like on paper great people, mm-hmm. right? And so it's very hard to come to terms with how an otherwise good person could do something so badly. And so when we're talking about like making these judgments on harm cause, it's like evaluate the action, because sometimes people who are otherwise amazing human beings do really shit things, right?
Yeah.
And how we view things right now is that like the whole of their, like the outside life, their life outside of that action is like being used to negate the harm caused by the action itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that I just, it's like very depressing to me. this is like why I haven't been on the show for a while. Cause I've like been in, I've been having like, I would say like a media, it's not a minor breakdown, but it's not like a major breakdown. It's like in the middle.
Somewhere in between. Yeah.
But I'm just trying to like come to terms with all that.
I mean, like, this is something that's important that we should probably talk out. And what better place to do it than on this show?
On a podcast, with all of my friends.
Yeah exactly.
You, dear listener, please listen to me struggle with my philosophies on the world.
Yeah, and it's like, these are questions that are worth considering, and it's definitely like these are definitely things that people think about. You know what I mean? I bet you even like people like fucking like Sadie Doyle or whatever to think about this kind of stuff.
Well, honestly, like, so bringing it back to when you were saying, like, everybody's having a breakdown because of quarantine, a lot of that is because, like, oh, we're chasing, like, what life could be if we, like, had time to do things that, like, were actually fulfilling to us. But a lot of that is that as a society, we are not taught how to sit with our negative emotions.
Yeah.
Like, emotions 100%. they don't have any value judgment. Like, they're, like, positive emotions are not inherently better than negative emotions. Yeah. They all serve
you just their feel purpose. Them.
Yeah, but, like, we as society have decided, like, oh, if you feel sad, there's something wrong with you, you need to change that. Or if you feel angry, there's something wrong, you need to change that. And I'm like, no, that's not how emotions work. And we are just, we're in a really stressful time. So, like, I think even if you didn't have anything else, even if you didn't have, like, worries about your finances or your house or anything else, like, just the uncertainty of, you know, what the future is going to look like is stressful. And so we'd all be feeling, you know, some type of way about it anyway, but, like, then we're feeling guilty for feeling some type of way, like, oh, well, this is the new normal, gotta, like, put on a fun pair of earrings for your next Zoom call, like,
yeah,
it's like, no, you're allowed to, it's better for you to understand that, like, okay, this is a tough time, the emotions you're feeling are, like, reasonable and fine and natural than it is to try and change them.
And also, it's not wrong to do those things. It's not wrong to put on your fun earrings or to cut bangs or dye your hair, like, pink, yeah, or whatever.
Whatever you're doing to get through this is the right answer.
You're surviving.
Like, 100%.
For sure.
Except unless you're profiteering off of N95 masks, that's the wrong thing.
I'm gonna have to stop that then.
Yeah, cut it out.
I'm sure a lot of listeners of Good Morning Comrade are hoarding PPE. I'm sure that's a large part of our demo.
I guess that this might be a good place to end it. But
yeah, I think so.
Anybody want to throw something in? Last words or anything? Last words, like, we're all going to
stay safe when when the quote unquote wherever you're living right now, when the lockdown's over, when they say everybody can go back out, don't do it.
If you can,
like, get if you work at a job that's high risk, like, I can't tell you what to do, but reach out to somebody. There's got to be some way to take care of your material needs, going back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the
garbage. You don't have to go work at your shitty job and die for die for Winn-Dixie or Kroger.
Yeah, well, for Tuesday we should probably talk about the garbage, the sanitation workers.
Yeah, sure. Sanitation strike. Workers are striking here at NOLA.
Before we go, though, I do want to plug that new project that I'm working on with Connor and Diana, who are both been guests on this show. We started a show called Union Thoughts. Check it out. We had a couple episodes go in. Our most recent one was with Amina Sheikh. And we all sang Happy Birthday to Connor, which is his birthday today.
Happy birthday, Connor.
Happy birthday.
And you can also check out Good Morning Comrade on WHIV-FM. 102.3 on your radio dial at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. You can also get, you know, more less regular releases, but I do want to get used to doing the Thursday shows. We kind of got off. I kind of, like, went really in hard right after this thing started, when I had my breakdown, and then when I had my second stage of the breakdown, I kind of backed off a lot. So now we just kind of need to figure out what the happy medium synthesis is.
Right.
I've just been drinking and trying to learn how to do watercolor. So
that's cool.
That's where I'm at.
But yeah, you can follow the follow the show on Twitter at Comrade Morning. You can help us out, support us if you can on Patreon, patreon.com/ Good Morning Comrade, Facebook Good Morning Comrade, Instagram Good Morning Comrade, all the stuff. So thanks everybody. You can follow me on Twitter at Eminent Prof. Aaron, you want to plug it so more?
I'm at Huggin' Not Buggin'. But if you're an Elon Musk fan, please don't come.
Yeah, then just tweet at Comrade Morning.
Yeah.
All right.
So tweet at Jeff.
No, yeah. Please. Yeah, dude, come get me. I can take it. Call me Susan. I don't care. All right, folks. Love you.